Hi folks, my name is Tim Plett. Welcome to the Tables Podcast. If you've already listened to parts one and two of The Light at the End of the Tunnel, you probably figured out what's going on. This is part three. But just in case you happen to drop in on this one without the benefit of parts one and two, you should be aware that this is the last installment of a three-part talkie bit, which is, in an unusual twist for our setting, actually sequential. They actually follow and build on one another in a very deliberate content oriented way. So if you just popped in to part three of The Light at the End of the Tunnel, I would strongly suggest that you take the time to back up and listen to parts one and two before you jump in. Having said that, I think the material in here is practical enough and accessible enough that I expect that if you feel like stress is pouring into your life faster than you can siphon it out, you'll find something here that's really helpful along the way. That's my hope and my desire. Peace to you. Enjoy the podcast. In any of those events, fight, flight, or freeze, we need to complete the cycle, not get stuck in the tunnel. So how do we do that? How do we complete the cycle? And this is very applied sort of stuff. This is very hands-on, all right? There are seven responses here. Again, they're not exhaustive, but they outline sort of the big chunks of possibility, if you will, the big realms of possibility here. So the most efficient way to complete this stress cycle is physical activity. Literally, any movement of our body. This is fascinating to me. It doesn't have to be athletic. And this is important because we're not all athletic, right? Among other things. It can be, and this is a very helpful one for me to be reminded of. It can be tense and release. Have an experience at work, and that can be at home at work as well, that something stressful happens and then the stressor is gone. The boss left the screen, the meeting's over, whatever. But we can feel our bodies kind of like just churning, right? Like we are fired up, and our brain and our neurobiology have sent this message: you're under stress and you need to respond. And we need to ditch that stress somehow. We need to siphon some of it off. Simple thing we can do. You just stand up wherever you are and you clench every muscle that you can consciously access in your body as hard as you can. Just tighten it all up, hold it for a few seconds, and then consciously release all of that tension. I don't get nervous when I speak at the table because I feel so received in this community, but I am experiencing stress when I'm ready to do a talkie bit because I'm concentrating really hard. I'm focused on a project, on a task, among other things, right? And when we're breathing together, when I'm conscious of this, I can feel the stress like draining down through my body. Like I can feel the different kind of muscle groups, major muscle groups in my body uncoiling while we do that. And I can feel them sort of coiling back up sometimes when I'm going along, depending how it's going, depending if the little message that says your signal's dying, not happening at the moment, which is great. But there's all these things that are little, at least little stressors that can add up, right? But just that tension and release, any physical activity, that can be enough to start to get this stew to kind of dial down and have it leave our bodies. Other physical activity obviously works just as well. Breathing. Second one is breathing. Breathing down-regulates our nervous system. You know that whole count to 10 when you're angry thing? It's not just sort of a nice idea about keeping your manners, about managing those emotional expression expectations. It might do that too. But physical breathing actually down-regulates our nervous system. And it's important in this process. There's sort of a two-part component to this. It's important that the breath in is slow, not a gasp. Our body will do that all on its own. We need the conscious part of this. So a slow breath in is important. But what's even more important in terms of down-regulating our nervous system is that the breath out is very slow. It's one of the reasons why we breathe in through our nose and out through our mouth. There's other reasons for that too, but not the least of which is that our brain experiences a breath in through our nose differently neurologically than it does a breath through our mouth. Anyway, a whole bunch of stuff to learn there. But slow breath in, slow breath out, right? This is, among other things, the gentlest way to deal with the stress cycle. And it can help in as little as a minute and a half. And even if that's not enough to get us all the way through It can siphon off some of the stress. It can allow us to continue through the situation until we get to a time and place where we can be more thorough. So really useful. Now, this might all sound kind of groovy, kind of neo-hippie-ish a little bit, but if you stop and think about it, it makes sense. Breath is how our bodies function. No breath, no life. It's that straightforward. So breath is central to every part of how we operate. It makes sense that it would also be central to how we regulate our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. It's central to everything that's about our life. So even if we don't do any of the mindfulness part of breathing, if we don't sort of attend to what happens to the way our thoughts kind of go bonkers when we stop and breathe, even if we just do the physical breathing part of it, it still makes a huge difference in dealing with the stress cycle. So, physical activity, breathing, positive social interaction. It's back to that hippo story. You get in through the door, and you just want to hug the person that let you in. You're a stranger in this story. Yeah, thank you, right? Like these strong emotions toward this person. You want to high five them. You want to shake their hand. You want to, fist bump them, elbow bump them, do whatever you can. You want to be closer to them than the current rules will allow. You want to express this. Now that inclination to connect positively in a social way is one of the reasons we're experiencing so much stress from this pandemic. It's because the very thing that we want to do in response to the stress of the pandemic is a thing that we need to not do the way we're used to doing it, because that's part of what keeps us safe. So we've got this dissonance that's like built right into one of these very effective responses to the pandemic, which is just to keep your distance, right? And so interesting thing though about this, because we might sort of think we need to sort of hug more people than we can, and that's a true feeling, we're missing that. But most of us, I hope, have someone in our life that's sort of inside the pod, someone that's safe in terms of this virus with whom we can have a moment at least of this. And it's interesting that it doesn't have to be we'll talk about the long hug in just a sec here, but even a brief social interaction can do this. So a positive conversation with, a barista or a cashier or someone with whom you need to have interaction can do this. And the reason this works is because it's a social way of our body getting the message that we're somewhere safe, right? And that's the message we need to get. And so even if we're not home in the physical sense, we're not in our own space, our body can get the message from positive social interaction that it's somewhere safe the way that home can be safe. Obviously, this gets more complex if we're dealing with issues of home not being safe or not having been safe, right? But making a positive assumption here, even a simple social interaction that's positive can help our body get the message safe. So that's the third one, positive social interaction. The fourth one is laughter. And this is interesting. Not social laughter, not deflective laughter, silly me. Not those laughters, but the kind of laughter that just like rocks your body, that makes you that makes you kind of lose it, right? Where you stop thinking about how you look. Things happen to your body that you didn't ask it to sort of do. Your tears come down your face, your jaw hangs open, you shake, whatever's kind of going on. The kind of laughter that makes us gasp for breath, right? This kind of laughter can be a hugely effective way of getting through the stress tunnel. And it's interesting. It's so powerful that even reminiscing about a time when we laughed this way can help move us through the stress tunnel. Isn't that fascinating? Sophia Scott, neuroscientist, says it this way. Laughter is an ancient system that mammals have evolved to make and maintain social bonds and regulate emotions. The other day I was watching one of those distractions that comes with, being online when you're working. My feed shows me this stuff from a mountain bike video organization called the Global Mountain Bike Network. And every once in a while they put together videos that people have sent them of mountain bike fails, of crashes essentially. And these two guys were hosting this series of videos, and the hosts were like screamingly funny. And I was watching it on my own and laughing so hard I was crying, like down in my office all by myself. And so later that evening, some of the kids and I were cleaning up after supper, and I was like, I'd been talking about this at supper, and I'm like, okay, I gotta show this to you guys because it's just actually that funny. And you know, it feels a little bit risky, right? Like, it's like, this was so funny to me, but what if they don't think it's this funny? Okay, we were all losing it by three quarters of the way through this thing. And when I was thinking about the kind of laughter that these researchers are talking about, that's what they're talking about, right? The kind of laughter where you're just like doubled over. I was like kneeling down in the kitchen with my head on the kitchen counter. I was just like, just completely howling at this stuff. This is an interesting thing because we kind of might go, well, that sounds very pop, you know. But if you go into ancient spiritual wisdom, you find this idea like all over the place. It shows up in almost every system of belief somewhere, the power of laughter to heal. If you want a sort of an Old Testament reference, there's a proverb that describes a merry heart as doing as much good as medicine. Fascinating, hey? All right, so laughter. Affection is the fifth one. A warm hug in a safe and trusting context can do as much to take us through the stress cycle as jogging a couple of miles. Great news for people who don't want to be sweaty, or for those who, practically speaking, for a variety of reasons, cannot go for a jog or do something more aggressively sort of physical. There's a tricky bit to this, though. There's some learning, I think, here for most of us. In order for a warm hug in a safe and trusting context to actually move us through the stress tunnel, it needs to last for a while. In fact, it needs to last for at least 20 seconds. That's a long hug. And there are some features to this hug that are important. Lots of ways for us to hug people, right? This hug, this safe and trusting kind of hug, a simple way to think about it is I'm hugging someone, but I'm not leaning on them. We have our own centers of gravity. We're balancing ourselves, but our arms are around one another and our bodies are pressed against one another. And we stay that way for at least 20 seconds. It's not the 20 seconds that's important. It's until we feel our body relax. But that tends to take at least 20 seconds, right? One therapist that the authors referenced calls it hugging until relaxed, right? And we have to learn how to listen to our bodies doing that. Now, this has to be mutual. Does that go without saying? I'm going to say it. Otherwise, it's a fail, all right, on a bunch of levels. But what happens if we do that is that our body actually, our chemistry actually shifts because our body sends this message, I've come home to somewhere safe, and I know that because my body feels safe pressed up against this other person's body. Powerful stuff. Here's a quote. The research suggests that a 20-second hug can change your hormones, lower your blood pressure and heart rate, and improve mood, all of which are reflected in the post-hug increase in the social bonding hormone, oxytocin. For free, 20-second hug, while maintaining your own center of gravity, sends the message, body, you're safe here. All right, number six is what the authors of the book called a big old cry. Yes. Quote, anyone that says that crying never solved anything, anybody hearing a parent's voice in their head right now, maybe their own voice as a parent, anyone that says that crying never solved anything doesn't know the difference between dealing with stress and dealing with the situation that causes the stress. So the idiom, crying never changed anything or crying doesn't fix anything, that idiom's half right in the sense that crying probably won't make the stressor go away. There are obviously exceptions. But generally speaking, crying doesn't make the stressor go away. But it is an embodied way of moving through the stress cycle and not letting the stress get trapped inside our bodies. And not all of us find crying easy. You know who you are. If we don't find crying easy, but we need a way to move through the stress tunnel, and sometimes we feel this welling up, but we squish it down, we can learn to cry. You can actually learn how to cry. Now, the trick to learning how to cry is to not focus on what's on the stressor, to not focus on the reason we're crying, but to actually focus on the experience of crying. How many tears are coming down my face? How hot do I feel? How much snot is coming out of my nose? Where am I feeling the stress in my body while I'm doing this? So the actual sensations of crying, don't return to what's causing you to cry. Just stay in the crying we can learn how to cry. It's a very, very useful thing to know how to do. And some of us have been taught so potently to not cry, and that it doesn't fix anything, that we will feel like we've failed somehow if we cry, right? We might even fear that it'll never stop. But it does, because it's a physical response. It's part of this system. And it won't last forever, beginning, middle, and end, remember? So we'll go through it. A long cry for most of our bodies is 5 minutes. And it will end. And we will have ditched a whole bunch of stress in the process. So that's number six. Number seven is creative expression. And that is sort of taking whatever is inside of us and putting it outside of us in some creative way. Now, I want to be fairly broad with this because some of us are like, that's nice, Tim, but I'm not an artist. I'm not going to paint my feelings, you know, or whatever. But it's just it's about a way of using our bodies to take the emotional stuff that's going on in our body's experience and moving it outside of our bodies, right? So, I mean, it can be everything from, you know, paint to yarn to writing to engineering a process to make something work better to, you know, demolishing our basement for a renovation, let's say. There's this theory about energy that probably most of us are at least broadly aware of, the theory of limited energy, that energy is something that is in the world, physically speaking. We can't add to it. We can't take away from it. All we can do is sort of move it around. And so when we think about it that way, when we make something with some of our energy, the energy that we're working with, we're not making more energy. We're just relocating it. So, you know, we can knit booties with our rage, right? And we can move some of that rage outside of ourselves where it might even do somebody some good. One of the musical artists, there have been all these living room concerts, right? Every, you know, singer that had 150 shows canceled is trying to find something to do with all of that energy. And so they're, you know, playing songs from their living room. And one of the artists I've been really enjoying the last while has been Norah Jones, someone whose music I have always enjoyed, but kind of ran across one of her living room mini concerts the other day and started watching a few of these. And I backed up to the beginning of the whole series. And she kind of sits down at the piano and she has this expression on her face that's almost hard. It's hard to read. It's not that unusual for her in some ways, I'm finding, but there's a powerful poignancy and sort of sadness behind her eyes, it seems to me. And she looks right into the camera and she says, I don't know what else to do, so I'm going to do this. And that's kind of all she says, and then she just starts into the music, you know? I know a professional musician friend of mine puts it another way. They're like, this is all I'm good for. Like, this is what I know how to make. So I'm going to make it one way or another. That's that idea, right? Carrie Fisher, if you want the bumper sticker version, take your broken heart and make it into art. That idea, right? Because creativity is an act of the imagination, we don't necessarily have to make something. We can actually do this in our imagination. We can visualize something. So again, one of the book's authors tells us, I think, funny story. She's the not athlete of the twins, but she was getting some exercise. She was on a stepping machine in her living room, and the organization she was doing her doctorate with was really frustrating her and really stressing her out at this point. So she just imagined she was Godzilla, and she was like stomping this organization into like smithereens. And she said, I got to the end of my, you know, planned exercise, and I just felt a lot better. So anyway, that's that idea. Mika's experiencing some stress behind me here. So just give me a moment, because she doesn't know about these things. I'm going to let her out. Clearly, I will have to return to that later and teach Mika how to just breathe. All right. So there's those. That's all we're going to talk about for that. There's an interesting observation from the authors that I've been referencing about how this all works in society. That in the end, a better world doesn't come from self-care, which it can sound like what we're all describing. It actually comes from us caring for one another. There's a part of this whole process where there's just lots of learning involved. At least that's my experience. And some of that learning has to do with just learning how to listen to our bodies tell us when we're actually making progress, when we're actually moving through the stress cycle, right? So we need support to do that. And this was sort of another surprise for me in this, because it really was feeling a lot like self-care. But we need a bubble of care in which others value our well-being at least as much as we do, or we're not going to be able to do this stuff. So instead of lean in, a common sort of idea about how to respond to stress, or lean down, kind of a newer iteration of it in current parlance and the zeitgeist. Instead of either of those, let's think about lean on or lean with. And this is one of the reasons I've been really enjoying, for example, our and lunch after and our Wednesday evening hangs. We're just leaning on one another. We're just talking to one another about what's going on. Some of that positive social interaction, right? Some of that being in life together that says, you know what? This world is okay. It has safe places in it. And our bodies can hear that. We need to learn to listen to our bodies, which is a whole nother thing for another day, perhaps. It's interesting to me that, again, in the ancient wisdom tradition that I'm most familiar with, which is the teachings of Jesus, when Jesus wants to point a bunch of people toward making a better world, making a better society, and they want to sum it up, as we have the stories, when they want to sum all of that wisdom up in one sentence, they're like, here's one commandment. Love one another. Love one another the way that you've seen me love. Lots of times this gets turned into a religious thing that's about crucifixion and resurrection and some of these big theological ideas, interesting things in themselves. But in sort of bare bones, practical genius kind of terms, it's about this. It's about the fact that we need to learn how to lean on one another. That's how we work toward peace. It's another version of mutual interdependence. All right, I'm going to just leave us with a couple of quick things here and we'll wrap it up because these have both been long ones. Some time ago, a student asked anthropologist Margaret Mead what she considered to be the first signs of civilization in a culture. And the student was sort of thinking, you know, she's going to talk about finding bone fish hooks or grinding wheels or, some kind of pottery or something like that. But Mead answered the question really differently than the student expected. She said that the first sign of civilization in an ancient culture was a femur, a thigh bone, one of those huge bones in your thigh, that had been broken and then healed. And she went on to explain that the reason she would say that is because in the animal kingdom, if you break your leg, you die. You can't hunt for food. You can't get down to the river for a drink. You are vulnerable. No animal survives a broken leg long enough for that bone to heal. And so a broken femur that is healed is evidence that someone has taken the time to stay with the one that has fallen, to bind up the wound, and they've carried the person to safety, and they've tended the person through recovery. Helping someone else through difficulty, Mead said, is where civilization starts, where a better world starts, where peace starts. We can build up quite a backlog, right? Especially if we've been hanging on to anger or hurt. We can build up a backlog of emotions if the stress funnel coming in has been fuller than the stress siphon going out. It can take a long time to work that stuff through. It can be like a broken femur would have been in a more primitive setting. And what matters is that we can feel, if we implement some of these strategies, our bodies moving in the direction of peace, but we often need, maybe always need, but sometimes we really feel the need for the support of others to make that safe space in which we can do that work. We need one another. The authors of this book that I've been referencing so much say it this way: the good news is that stress is not the problem. Right now, if you're like me, there might be a ha welling up in you. Just stay with me here. The problem is that strategies that deal with stressors have almost no relationship to the strategies that deal with the physiological reactions our bodies have to the stressors. So that's an important distinguishing, right? Lots of us learn strategies for dealing with stress, to try to get the stress to stop, but not for dealing with this, or with the stressors rather, strategies for making the stressor stop and not for dealing with the stress in our bodies. And they go on to say this: to be well is not to live in a state of perpetual safety and calm, but to move fluidly from a state of adversity, risk, adventure, or excitement, all of which can bring stress, back to safety and calm and out again. Stress is not bad for you. Being stuck is bad for you. There we go. Good summary. Wellness, including spiritual wellness, which we could describe as the freedom and equipping to love one another, is not a state of being. It's a state of action. The freedom to oscillate, to to be able to not only roll with stressors and stress, but to learn how to roll through them as well, so we can continue to care well for one another and to lean on others to help us care for ourselves. Moving toward peace. There we go. That's where I'm going to leave it. It's been a long one. Thanks for hanging in there. And I hope some of this feels to you like it feels to me, which is like profoundly pragmatically useful, and in its usefulness also quite beautiful, and pointing toward something mysterious and big, bigger than me, toward the more that I think of when I think about the realm of what I believe and how that works. Peace, everybody. Bye for now.